Good evening. Welcome to the Salary Report. Today is Thursday, October 4th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, it's a special time. It's October. It's the launch of the third quarter wrap-up. Our theme is megacities and the growth of global real estate companies. We roll out our wrap-ups in four shows. The first two, News Trends and Stories, Part 1 and 2, a discussion with Joseph Farrell. It's a deep dive on the news, but it's a great summary for the quarter. And then we'll do an equity overview and Rambus Chartology in the third show, and then our theme, megacities. Each wrap-up comes with a web presentation, and it's built during the process of rolling out the different shows. The news, trends, and stories section is complete, so I would encourage you, as you're listening to the discussion with Joseph, to head over to the web presentation. You can click from the commentary. It's megacities.solari.com, or when you get there, just log in with your Solari Report password. And you'll find there the links and both the top stories as well as the headlines that sort of encouraged us to choose that as the top story. So make sure you check out the web presentation. Again, you can link to it from the commentary on the homepage. Last week, we launched our wellness series, Bridget Mouchet's first episode. It's going to happen quarterly. She started with an interview on the microbiome with Dr. Tom O'Brien. There are a lot of good tips. Even I realized, oh, I have to throw out the plastic containers. Anyway, so it's a very useful one. And because the microbiome is so important to your health and the strength of your immune system is so important to navigating times like this, I really recommend that one to you. Hold that date. I'm leaving next Thursday for Amsterdam. I'll be attending the Ulrich Gonegger's workshop. You can link to it in the events section. And then I will head to Lake Constance for a couple of days. And then Ulrich's colleagues and I will head down to the international conference in Italy. And then I'll head back up to Zurich and Basel for several weeks. And then I'm going to be in New York City in the first week of November. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the New York subscribers there. And then I'll be back in Hickory Valley. So another month talking to you from Europe. Our theme tonight is the Fed raises rates and the turn of the screw. Rising interest rates is really the turn of the screw. It's whereby insiders really turn the screw on the outsiders. Right now, the U.S. is relatively in a strong position as a result of tax reform and the capital repatriation and holding itself out as the global haven. We're becoming the global offshore haven. Rising rates are going to generate a fair amount of bank income that protects the banks and is going to start to offer some relief to the insurance companies. That means the problems that are going to occur are going to be global, not domestic, starting with the weakest emerging market credits. What we've seen, I think we're going to see more. We had a great interview with Rob Kirby in 2017 on interest rate swaps and the challenge of managing the interest rate swap derivative book when interest rates rose. And one of my questions when you look at the effort to pull back into North America is the leadership of the United States concerned what will happen with derivatives as interest rates rise, and is part of this effort a way of pushing the derivative problems onto Europe? Again, our banks took the bad debt and basically stuck it to the central bank and to the government. Whereas Europe has kept a lot more of the paper on their bank books, and that means they've got a harder row to hoe. This is all happening at the same time. Over the next 2 years, we need to transition the paper priced with LIBOR. It's an interest rate index. We have $260 trillion of financial products, whether interest rate swaps to retail mortgages that are priced with LIBOR. So the derivative market between rising interest rates and the switchover of LIBOR is going to be a very complicated place to be. And if you're interested, that interview with Rob Kirby is great background. The Fed has indicated that there's plenty of strength in the economy. They plan to raise again one more time this year. To a certain extent, they're not making interest rates. They're following the market up. meantime, one important issue as you look at the equity markets is the U.S. markets have diverged so far from international. The question is, what will interest rates do to the equity markets, but also can the U.S. keep the steroids coming now that tax reform and repatriation are underway and to a certain extent have been priced in? We've gotten quite a run-up since they happened. As I've said many times, that as long as the interest rate rises are within 150 basis points a year, generally the stock market can handle it. We saw bonds sell off today. It was triggered by a number of things. And it triggered a U.S. equity decline. The U.S. S&P down almost 1% after it was down 1.4% during the session. Europe was down. European stocks down about 1.2%. Emerging markets down about 2.6%. The market commentator said one concern was that wage growth of 3% indicated inflation. The Treasury rose to 3 point, or the 10-year Treasury rose to 3.23%. We saw the 30-year hit 3.45, and the 5-year hit 3.05. To a certain extent, bankers are using the interest rates to claw back the wage increase that got handed out, on the theory that that's going to keep inflation in check. The reality is it's going to protect the insiders, and the outsiders are going to get throttled. And so this is going to all make this a very expensive environment because we have a higher cost of living with higher costs of energy and a higher cost of capital. Another very important story, I think, that hit the bond market and sort of hit the general feeling is that we have a report from Bloomberg, an extensive investigation that China has used a tiny chip to infiltrate U.S. companies, that we've had 30-plus U.S. companies plus DOD, CIA, Navy warships throughout the system have been compromised by a tiny chip put on, it's described as not much bigger than a grain of rice, that was part of a board, a motherboard, and as a result, you have compromise throughout the system. And I think it's one of the reasons that the reshoring is happening. You have DOD and the military-industrial complex saying, we can't afford to outsource. Now, if you look at the technology we have given away to China or the quality control problems we've encountered as a result of our dependency in many areas, including pharmaceuticals, as I pointed out with my book review of China Rx, this is a major issue. And again, we're like two Siamese twins punching each other. So you wonder how this is going to go well. But I think much of the reshoring that's now happening at very high speed is the entire U.S. military infrastructure is looking at these kinds of problems and saying we need to regather within North America and protect our supply lines. The implications, however, to the U.S. dollar and the U.S. securities of basically the U.S. losing supremacy in tech, or, you know, both in the cybersecurity area as well as in the market business area, that's going to have a very significant impact on the U.S. position in a variety of markets and in the world. Money in markets, U.S. dollar index now up almost 4% for the year. Fixed income, as I said, really off today. The long treasury now down 8.32% for the year. The intermediate treasury ETF down almost 4%. The bond aggregate down 2.4%. And junk still holding its own at 1.36%. Equities, the S&P closed up 9.88% for the year today. Yesterday it was up over 10.75%, so that's backing down almost 100 basis points. Interestingly enough, despite all the fighting back and forth between China and the U.S., Tencent, which is the largest Chinese internet company, Tencent Music filed for IPO in the U.S. They're hoping to raise $1 to $2 billion. At the same time, the Wall Street Journal pointed out that 83% of U.S. listed IPOs in 2018 are firms that have lost money in the last 12 months. That will tell you something about how quickly tech is moving. A lot of discussion about whether to rebalance to foreign markets because the U.S. market has so outperformed foreign markets since the end of the financial crisis, and the divergence of U.S. markets is clearly at a major high against international and emerging market markets. I'm going to discuss that. That's going to be a focus of our discussion in the equity overview, but I think there's more pain to be felt in the emerging markets, so I'm not as enthusiastic yet about the rebalance, but more on that in the equity overview. Home builders still having a bad year, down 14.8%. VGK, the European ETF, down 3.73%. Germany down 8.6%. Oof. Developed markets minus North America, down 3.07%. China large caps down 10.62%. And the China small caps down 12.95%. You can see why Tencent might want to come to the U.S. markets. Emerging markets down 12.43%. Now, commodities back up into the black. They're up 2.54%. That's a little bit of good news for the emerging markets. And then gold down 8.22% and silver down 14.26%. Rising interest rates, not good for precious metals. And as you've heard me say before this year, I don't expect precious metals to have a good year this year. Oil is flying. Interest rates are flying and oil is flying. And energy and interest rates hits everybody's budget across the board. Everybody you know, everybody you do business with is dealing with really big costs. Interestingly enough, the energy is the largest cost in U.S. manufacturing, not labor. As what Jim Norman said several years ago, I assume the relationship still holds. So oil up 40.52%. Good news for the Russians. Anyway, so as you can see, a lot of pain in the markets, and I suspect the pain is far from over. So a lot has been going on, and it almost seems as though the attention paid to the Supreme Court nomination and hearings of Judge Brett Kavanaugh were meant to distract. So let's look at some of the really big things going on. Europe has unveiled a special purpose vehicle to bypass SWIFT so their companies can continue to do business with Iran. We see Netanyahu pushing for accusing the Iranians of further development on the nuclear weapons side and pushing, I would call it pushing for war. Trump gives a very aggressive speech at the UN regarding Iran, more back and forth with sanctions and threats vis-a-vis Russia. We have the U.S. ambassador to NATO threatening Russia. Lavrov gave a speech at the UN, which was very sobering and very, as usual, impressive. That's the Russian foreign minister. So the tensions between Russia and the United States and with Iran are significant. At the same time here, the battle for the Constitution is significant. I had one subscriber report to me that they were going to have a presentation in their church on why they should protect and keep the Constitution intact. It was canceled. You kind of wonder when churches feel it's not safe to protect the Constitution, what might happen. I can't say that's what caused it, but it looked to me like it was going to be too controversial. So clearly, the California fires speak to why the leadership might want to change the Constitution, as well as what could happen if they're able to do so. If the fires are happening with the Constitution existing, imagine what could go on. My question, which I'm going to be talking about more on the Solera report, is Make America Great Again really make America great for the oligarchs? NAFTA has now moved to Congress. The administration was successful in finalizing agreement that included both Mexico and Canada. It appears that it promotes GMOs, trying to push more GMOs into Mexico, as well as fracking. The administration giving indication they want future trade deals to do some of the same things here. My concern is if we use our trade deals to promote GMOs globally, this could get really ugly. Word is that Mueller is laying off attorneys in Washington. It's not surprising, given Bob Woodward's statement that after 2 years of research, he could find no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, which begs the question, where was the evidence sufficient to appoint a special prosecutor, a special investigator? It's absurd. And if Woodward can't find a shred of evidence after looking for 2 years, what does that say about what they used to get the Mueller investigation going? Unfortunately, I think what they used was the Steele report. And basically what you have is the whole thing looks like a frame job by the Department of Justice and the FBI. And the question is it really as bad as it looks? Because if it is, it's certainly fraud, and the question is it treason? The one reason that Mueller may be actually passing the ball to the New York Times, Cuomo, and the New York AG, who are now doing dancing the tango on the Trump tax report by the New York Times, I doubt this will do anything except cost the Trump family and the Trump company millions of dollars and thousands of hours, which is not to be underestimated, but... I think the American public knew when they voted for Trump that his business practices left something to be desired, and they were sure there was, you know, decades of aggressive tax treatment. So, but I don't underestimate the complexity or pain that this could cost to go back and argue your taxes from the beginning of time, including your parents' estate decades ago. So let's turn to the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, which has certainly taken up a lot of airspace over the last 2 weeks. The fight's never about what the fight is about. That's part of the cost of living with so much extraordinary secrecy. The Democrats want very much to stall the pick until after the election, because the Republicans will get a majority of their people on the courts. And the Democrats are hoping to gain Senate majority and House majority in the election. I doubt they will, but they could get the House. I doubt they'll get the Senate. But they want to try, and they have everything to gain by stalling and nothing to lose. Unfortunately, rather than have a debate on the merits, what we're having is a debate on something that they believe the American people will find entertaining. And so it's become a circus. And part of the problem with a circus is there are multiple violations of due process. And entertainment is really being used to distract from the key issues. One of the key issues is, if you look at Kavanaugh's record, it appears that he's far more loyal to the establishment than he is to the Constitution or the law. And the concern is, if you're going to have a purge of the financial coup people, he's going to be on board for sort of more central control. So that's one issue. The thing that concerns me the most about the whole affair is you're watching the population being weaponized. Whichever side you're on and whomever you're for, anyone who thinks it's excusable to violate due process is encouraging an abrogation of the law that could hurt any one of us. You create a weapon that can be used by anybody. It's inquisition tactics. It's spectral evidence. There's a process, and we're supposed to follow the process, and we're supposed to meet a certain standard of evidence, none of which this does. But you're watching people, no matter what their point of view, whether it's for or against Kavanaugh, they're being weaponized to be unreasonable, not just about due process, but also treating the people involved, you know, treating Ford or Kavanaugh as if they're metaphors, as opposed to judging them on the merits of them as individuals. We're not metaphors. We're not part of a blob. We're not an integral, indivisible member of the blob to be punished for why we're angry at the blob. Each human is an individual, and needed to be, you know, we need to be treated as such. And the reality is, when whatever happens, if we go into a period where financial coup leadership or other people are just deemed to be in the way of the oligarchs are being purged, if the hope porn and the fear porn and these different tactics and the shriekometer can teach and train the population to turn into weaponized or to be weaponized and turned on people, you know, with raw emotion and all sorts of manipulative games, then it's going to be the, you know, basically the Roman mob, you know, cheering every time some Christians get eaten by the lions. I know I dealt with it because when I got sort of thrown out of the establishment during the litigation, you know, it was all designed, the press and smear was all designed to get the general population who was the angry at the establishment to take it out on me. What the establishment does if they want to punish one of their members is they basically throw you like the Christian to the lions and the mob cheers because they're angry at the establishment and it's safe to kill you. You're basically a whipping boy. So, you know, scapegoating, violations of due process are not okay. Scapegoating people is not okay. Treating people like they're metaphors and not individuals is not okay. And what you don't want is you don't want to allow the media or politicians to allow you to fall into that trap. One of the questions is the impact on the election. I want to read something from the Wall Street Journal editorial, which was quite amazing. Very astute. The 63 million or so Americans who voted for Donald Trump weren't the lunatic fringe. For many, Mr. Trump was their vessel for two concerns: the future of the Supreme Court and the implications of a Hillary Clinton presidency after Barack Obama's two terms. The Kavanaugh nomination has put both these powerful subtexts from 2016 back in play. The Democrats have managed to shift the midterm elections away from Mr. Trump's personality and make it about the Supreme Court, the status of the law in the U.S., and the nature of democratic rule. The sincerity of Ms. Ford's testimony notwithstanding, this phase of the confirmation began with no corroborative evidence against Judge Kavanaugh and is ending with no evidence. The acceptance of this no evidence standard, not just by the Judiciary Committee Democrats, but by nearly all Democrats and most of the media, is something people have noticed. I agree with that. And I think, if anything, this will galvanize the Republican base to turn out and care in a way that overrides their concerns with the president's personality and his tweeting. You know, it's very interesting. I've been sort of trying to figure out what I'm going to do in the Senate race here in Tennessee, because if you look at the Republican running, there's somebody who's sold us down the river on multiple occasions to AT&T and the telecoms, which is very, very frustrating for me, particularly if you look at what it does to compromise security, privacy, and budgets. At the same time, the thought of voting for the Democrat, who I like very much, who was a former governor of Tennessee, but that would put Chuck Schumer in a leadership position as in the majority, or you know, could put Dianne Feinstein in the chairman position. It's terrifying to me. So then we go over to the House. The idea of Maxine Waters in a leadership position is also terrifying. So I'm unfortunately going to have to hold my nose and vote for the Republican. The House passed a tax reform cleanup bill. It's not going to pass the Senate anytime soon. Part of it is to sort of make things a little bit kinder and more reasonable to small business versus big business. U.S. farmers hurting, the trade wars are hurting them. There has been a lot of press recently about farm tech and the robotics coming, making headlines. The farmers who don't get with the robotics are going to also get run over. So if you're in agriculture, you need to figure that out and make sure you jump the curve on the application of high tech and robotics to farming. California is now the fourth state to pass and sign a net neutrality bill. Unfortunately, the Department of Justice sues. Talk about the Republicans being on the wrong side of telecommunications. They're going to if they're really killing themselves on telecommunications. We had a White House conference in the middle of the Kavanaugh hearings on 5G. Larry Kudlow got up in one breath, talked about how much he loved the Austrian economics or economists, and then proceeded to talk about why it was so important to just ignore and steamroll the 10th Amendment, that local governments had no right, which means individuals have no rights. Thanks, Larry Kudlow. The Austrian economists would roll over in their grave if they heard you say that. They believed in individual sovereignty. The Department of Justice is investigating Yale now for discrimination. They have been investigating and pressuring Harvard on discrimination against Asian Americans. This is these are two very important investigations, both Harvard and Yale. If it reverses the school's ability to determine who they want and how they want, you're going to see a significant increase in the number of Asian Americans accepted. And it's one place where the rise of Asia could have a major, major impact in terms of education populations. It already has. I've talked about it before, the sort of pressure on state universities to hold those positions open for not Asian Americans, Asians. It's a quota going the other way. But there's no doubt, I believe from reading what I've seen so far, that the Asians, by and large, have higher IQs and also much more motivated families, much more stress culturally on education. So I think that population, with Department of Justice pressure, is going to rise at the top schools. The SEC has now engineered Elon Musk out of the chairman position at Tesla and forced two independent board members into Tesla. Musk just keeps fighting. He tweeted a nasty tweet to the SEC, calling them the short seller something agency, but it was a spin on SEC. Finally, the presidential test message alert came out this week, and so millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people had their phones and alert radios go off, and you kind of wonder what it all meant. Somebody saying, oh, great, the president can tweet everybody in America. He's really happy. We have a great new Food for the Soul column. Check it out. It's on the Louis Vuitton Museum in Paris. Looks very interesting. And I put up a new book review, AI Superpowers, China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order by Kai-Fu Lee. I give it a very strong recommendation. If you want to understand what AI is doing now and why the impact is so great and going faster than people expect, I think Kai-Fu Lee has a very good handle on the overt side of the economy, what's going on there, and how it looks in China versus the United States. It's a very useful book, very well written, very easy to read by somebody who really knows a lot. He ran speech recognition at Apple and then went to China for Microsoft to start their lab in China, which was a major effort by Microsoft starting in the late 90s. And then he started Google's effort in China and then left to start his own venture capital firm. So he's talking his book, but he has a very deep understanding of the application of AI in business and what it's going to do to equity values in the investment world. I would really check it out. Our hero this week is U.S. Senator Grassley, Republican of Iowa. He referred one of the unfounded allegations they received for Kavanaugh for investigation by the FBI and possible prosecution, the implication being unfounded allegations that are used to make a mess in the circumstance are really, really lawless and should be prosecuted. So very chilling for somebody who wants to come forward. But I think it's time that the shriek-o-meter got held to certain basic standards of the law. And they need to start thinking twice before they just throw smears up on the wall. I lived through a smear campaign with lie after lie after lie after lie after lie. And the expense of dealing with a media that feels perfectly comfortable in telling complete lies without evidence and think it's funny and think it's cute and think it's all just part of the game, you know, it's a very lawless situation. So bravo to Grassley for doing it. We just made public a special Solari report. It's an interview with Alan Phillips, the leading attorney in the country on vaccine freedom and vaccine exemptions. It's called Please Join Us in Supporting Alan Phillips and Your Health Freedoms. There's a nice little video, and then you can read all about it. Alan Phillips is one of those people who's been doing incredible things to protect all of us on the vaccine issue. And he's getting increased pressure from the North Carolina bar and pressure to give up his client's privacy. And it's very chilling. And this is that time when you can really help the people that are helping you. And so I think it's very, very important that we support Alan. You can pray for him. You can donate money. I assure you no amount of money is too small. One of the things the big donors look at is how many little donors do they have. So, you know, donate a dollar, it counts. And then he's got a petition as well. So a wonderful lawyer, a wonderful professional, and somebody has done a great deal of good in this world. So I would encourage you to check it out and do what you can to say a prayer and support Alan Phillips and with him, your health freedoms. I want to mention, I also last week wrote a short piece in support of Corbett, James Corbett, who was attacked by Mother Jones. I originally posted a comment and just a shame on you at Mother Jones about it, and then republished my comment on Solari Report and tweeted it out. When I was in Uluru with Richard Dolan, Richard talked about how concerned he was that fake news and a variety of censorship efforts were going to pick us off one by one. And we talked a lot about, okay, how can we be the Air Force and make sure when somebody's going after, we swoop in and help out. And so my effort for James Corbett and my effort here for Alan Phillips is to try and do that. But I see that as a very important role at Solari, telling you who's credible and who's not, who we would recommend you support, because I think it's very, very important that we all gather and support the truth tellers as we can. And it's quite remarkable what happens when the crowd goes to work and says, no, 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 you're not going to pick us off one by one. You're not going to divide and conquer us. It's what the founding father said. We must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly, we shall all hang separately. great concept. Let's go to the movies. Michael Oswald and John Christensen have produced really a riveting new documentary on Britain's global offshore network about how the British Empire, as it declined, converted its physical empire to instead a financial empire, and a financial empire that is exceptionally important to the secrecy and financial power of the entire Anglo-American alliance. One of the numbers that Christensen uses kind of catches you up is the growth of the UK global offshore network into $50 trillion. And that $50 trillion compares rather nicely to the $50 trillion that during the same period I said disappeared from the US government in bailouts or missing money. Dr. Farrell and I touched on this. I think one of the reasons that the Queen wanted to go forward with Brexit is to protect the privacy and market share of the Anglo-American offshore wealth and the power that the secrecy within that system gives them. Anyway, it's very well done. It's called The Spider's Web, Britain's Second Empire, and I would recommend it to you. I think it's really part of understanding our world and the economy and financial flows. One of the things Joseph and I talk about in the interview is whether or not the ultimate offshore haven is being moved into space, which I've brought up before and we both agree is happening. Which leads us to the interview. As you all know, I road tripped over to Joseph's house and we had a very fine conversation about the important things that are going on. We're being hit with multiple tsunamis all at the same time: AI and robotics, the rise of Asia, the explosion in the overt space program, and the role of corporations in space, and then reverse globalization and pulling back into North America. And so it's important to choose through these things. I'm always I just enjoy getting Joseph's take on things. He has such a deep understanding of history, such a deep understanding of science, and looks at things very creatively. So it's always fascinating to talk with him about this. And we want, more than anything, we want you to be able to connect the dots of these different trends to your life and become part of the conversation with us about how we navigate and optimize. Nobody knows what's going to happen. We're going through things that nobody's ever gone through before. And so it's, no one is smarter than all of us. It's going to take all of us to sort of figure this out and navigate. It's going to be a road full of very unexpected and accelerating changes. A few words about my choice of mega cities. I was inspired. I've wanted to do mega cities for a couple years now. But when I was studying the rise of the Asian consumer, I was struck at how many of the mega cities are in Asia. It's really the fantastic growth of the megacities is really an Asian phenomenon. Over 30 of the 46 megacities are in Asia. So, you know, you only have a few in Europe, a few in the U.S., a few more in Latin America, and then just explosive growth in Asia. And if you look at the pressure that a rising middle class in Asia and the sort of growth of the land empire between Europe and Asia will put on the planet and the environment, it obviously makes sense that the world's going crazy trying to figure out how to do driverless cars, because then, you know, we can do a lot more car sharing, et cetera. Anyway, but it's very, very interesting. So the quote I put up on the commentary is 55% of the world population lives in urban areas today, increasing to 68% by 2050. The other thing you see is the flow of capital out of Asia investing around the world. And it's really, a lot of that capital is going into real estate. It's one of the things that have been bubbling markets in the big cities around the world. And so I also wanted to take a look at the growth of the global real estate company. And as I said, that'll flow out in four sections. So check out our discussions are always very long. So you may want to break it into pieces. We've put up there are 10 stories in part one and then 10 stories in part two, plus the unanswered questions and inspiration to go local. So we put them up in chapters. And so you may want to listen to them by chapter, and that's a way to break it up. Ask Catherine, first question. I was going through where to stash your cash salary report a while back and saw that you didn't mention cash value whole life insurance policies as a possibility. What are your thoughts on the infinite banking or bank on yourself models where you use dividend paying whole life insurance policies to build equity cash value and use them as collateral to finance purchases and investment opportunities? Are you familiar with these models? Yes, I'm typically not a fan, only because you get into a level of complexity that if you have a credit issue with the insurance company or you get the kind of hiccups we got in 2008, you can get yourself into very expensive, troublesome messes. I appreciate the arbitrage, but it's an arbitrage that can be very hard or expensive to unwind. So I like to keep things simple, and I like airtight compartments so one thing can't mess up another. It's also very, very important in this environment to do things of high integrity. And I've found when pricing insurance, a really excellent credit with really solid reputation can be phenomenally expensive. And many of the arrangements I've looked at that look attractive on the front of it are not really, once you dig in and look at the credit. What's your take on Martin Armstrong is the second question. The last time I gave my opinion on this, I got a drop from his email list within 24 hours. It was a remarkable coincidence, or Martin has a thin skin. Then the questioner continues, he seems to have made some good prediction, but he would mock and deride the idea of a Mr. Global running the world and contends that the world's problems are the result of greedy, clueless politicians who have no idea what they're doing, which is why they call him. That contradicts my experience. I'm sure he has a lot of politicians calling him, but that's what I would call the middle management. My experience with the people on the top is they're quite capable. I don't necessarily agree with their values, but And I will say it's a lot harder. You know, it's a big job to run the world in secret. It's complicated. It's hard. And humans are humans. So you continue, his theory that a rising dollar is what will bring the global financial system down at this point looks convincing, but his defense of central banking and the time he spent in prison makes me skeptical. He calls the creature from Jekyll Island a bogus propaganda piece. He seems to talk out of both sides of his mouth, on one hand writing about the deep state, on the other penning articles that the CIA had nothing to do with the Ukraine. Well, that kind of says it, doesn't it? So I am concerned about the potential for conflicts of interest there. And his comments often, I find, don't match up with the facts, so I disagree. He also believes in black boxes. I don't believe in black boxes, and I don't believe, you know, betting the ranch on black boxes. I think he's a very smart person, and he offers an independent and original point of view. He doesn't just run with a crowd. And I like his use of history and cycles. So when clients who have been subscribers have told me what he says or something, you know, sometimes I find it very interesting. It's been amazing how often he and I agree about where the dollar is going or how it will do. So you continue, the questioner continues, with the upcoming 2018 midterm elections, do you think the China's working behind the scenes with the Democrats to win in both houses? I think the Chinese are likely tracking every election. I don't know which ones they're working on behind the scenes. I expect them to be aggressive in terms of interference. They always have been, but the Israelis as well. And if you look at interference with elections or the political process in this country, I'm a lot more concerned about Israel and China. But you know, there are plenty of people interfering. The more money you have, the more you're interfering. If the Democrats control both houses, you continue, there could be a push to impeach President Trump, especially if Mueller findings support that action. Mueller is unlikely to support the action. I think that's why they're turning things over to the New York team to try and dig something out on taxes that might work. But I don't think Mueller had anything to go on, and I don't think he's found anything. I just note what Bob Woodward had said. Then you continue, China could then hammer out a better tariff and trade agreement with Pence. I think the folks, you know, the folks who go to the Bohemian Grove are going to control what happens after, you know, whether Trump stays in or they go to Pence, not the Chinese. So we just have to see what happens. I think it's real easy to blame it on the Chinese, not that they don't interfere. Hi, Catherine. Have you heard of Inrupt? Tim Berners-Lee is allegedly trying to decentralize the web, taking the centralized internet control away from Google's and Facebook's of the world. Interesting Fast Company article, but curious if this is another decentralization Trojan horse like Bitcoin. Thoughts? I've posted it. I'm very interested in looking at it. I don't know a lot about it. Clearly, Berners-Lee is someone to be respected. I just don't know, so we'll have to see. Again, the challenge is that you have an internet which is ultimately controlled by the people who control physical force. They control the hardware. Therefore, ultimately, they're in control. I just note I got Richard Mayberry's latest newsletter, which always makes me chuckle, but one of the things he says is the war between the governments, now that the U.S. has announced it can take the offense on cyber hacking and cybersecurity, not just defense. He says basically he believes that the governments of the world are going to go to war, and basically their war is going to destroy the internet or make it, you know, literally take it down for weeks or months or make it almost impossible to deal. And if you look at all the people centralizing, the extent to which they're compromising the integrity of the internet, or they just don't care about the integrity. They're so busy trying to use it for their schemes. Mayberry makes sense. It could happen. I would note, I just received my manual typewriter, which I ordered over a year ago from Eastern Europe. It's finally come, but I want to be prepared if need to take this O'Leary report to all. You know, if we have to go to hard copy, we're going to have to go to hard copy, but I take Mayberry's warning seriously. It could happen. And then you say, hope it's good. Hello there. I'm a new subscriber. Can you recommend whom to purchase metals from? Miles, Franklin, Kitco, et cetera. We don't recommend precious metals dealers. And one of the reasons I have not done a lot of recent due diligence, so I'm not current. The big issues are, do you want to buy from somebody local versus by mail? If you buy mail, then the post office, you know, knows you got precious metals. If you can find a good local dealer who you trust and, you know, pick it up and take it from there, part of it is, do you want to buy and put it with a custodian? Because there's certain dealers who have custodian relationships with them, like Fidelitrade in Delaware. Or do you want to hold or put in your bank deposit? So where you hold is going to impact sort of what the best dealer is. As I said, I like dealers who get multiple recommendations. Franklin Sanders of the Money Changer has been on the Solera Report to do the precious metals market for many, many years. And so obviously I trust Franklin. He and his team are quite competent. I would strongly recommend before you do anything that you price and talk to multiple dealers. If anybody gets pushy with you, cut them off. Unfortunately, that's a world with way too many pushy people. The important thing to know is only buy bullion. Do not buy numismatics. See my article on the website called, just do a search, Allergic to Numismatics. You want to pay the lowest premium to melt value. You don't want to pay for any, you know, you don't want to pay for a coin that's antique. You don't want to pay for a coin that's old. I love junk silver because it is legal tender. But it generally has its bullion and it has the low premium to melt. It's 90% bullion. It's not pure bullion. I forgot to ask Catherine about her visit to Chartres. Did you get to walk the labyrinth? Before I go on, let me just mention, I have a classic article, What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals? And I would recommend you read that too. So read Allergic to Numismatics and then read What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals, and then figure out whether you want to do business by local versus mail, and whether you want somebody, a dealer who's got a custodian institution with or next to it. And I would talk to Franklin Sanders and talk them through your holdings, but I would certainly price with more than one dealer, and anybody who is pushy, I would drop them. It's not a bad idea to buy a burner phone to call the dealer so you don't get on their lists. Next question. I forgot to ask Catherine about her visit to Chartres. Did you get to walk the labyrinth? What was your impression of that experience? It's on my bucket list. I did walk the labyrinth. It was very crowded that day, so I can't say that it was a mystical experience. I was just trying not to bump into people. The most impactful for me was the organ concerts and the light shows, and the love of the place, of the community for Chartres and for the cathedral, not just now, but throughout history. So when you go through and you hear the stories about all the stained glass windows, it's just extraordinary, the involvement and participation of the whole community around it. And anyway, it's a remarkable place. I spent 4 days in Chartres and did all sorts of tours and different events at the cathedral. And it's just it's like its own little world. Another comment question. I just wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed the luncheon and getting the opportunity to meet you in person along with Dr. Skidmore. This subscriber is referring to our lunch in Asheville. The woman who attended with me was blown away by the information you shared, as she is new to this type of information. Wow, you sure threw her into the swimming pool. She took it to heart and is now on a rampage. So apparently you and Mark hit a nerve with her. She also just subscribed to Solera. You're a remarkable person, and all I can say is thank God I found you through Greg Hunter. I hope to see you again in the future somewhere else at another event in the near future. Thank you for everything you do. I didn't get it. Well, thank you so much for coming. It was a wonderful group. I have to tell you, everybody loves coming to our lunches, not because of the lunch, but because they meet each other. It's so funny to watch. I really enjoy sort of the thrill subscribers get about meeting so many other really accomplished, attractive people who also don't buy the official reality and are extremely knowledgeable and have a pretty accurate map of the world. Hi, Catherine. Was looking through your bio. Noticed you've dropped out of most, if not all, of your previous affiliation membership over the last decade or so. The only institution you seem affiliated with is your church and, of course, Solari. Is this just the normal evolution of a conspiracy theorist? I count myself in that number, although I really hate the term. Or did you just leave of your own accord? I shed lots of responsibilities to go into the administration. And then when I left, I ended up having to shed a lot of them, you know, what remained, because I was working 24 hours a day building a firm from scratch. And the firm was very successful, which kept me very busy. And then, of course, the litigation. And then that, you know, what remained, I dropped for either for financial reasons or, you know, I just didn't have the time and money to go flying to board meetings, et cetera. So it was a natural process. And then when I started Solari Investment Advisory, you're back to startups but this time also dealing with headwinds. So from a time management standpoint, it's just impossible to have a lot of those kinds of activities. And of course I live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee, so it's not, you know, it's not as though I'm living in the middle of New York City. I should note, I just joined the Rural Development Center that Mark Skidmore runs at Michigan State University, so I'm going on that board. And my first board meeting is next week. You continue here, why am I interested? Your dance with the government would prompt anyone to pick up a new outlook. I guess I'm just seeing an epiphany of sorts in all of the change, or one could even surmise, you know, something we don't and are cutting ties and picking up. I'm thinking it's the former. I would say this, it's extremely important to me when I do Solari that I don't have conflicts of interest. One of the many reasons, it was many reasons, not one, that I shut down my individual investment advisory practice. I continue to do investment screens, so the investment advisory company continues, but I'm not doing the individual advice. And the reason I shut it down was I wanted to make sure there were no conflicts between what I wanted to do for the Solari report and trying to protect the clients. So I think that given the way the world is, it's extremely important for me not to have conflicts of interest. It's one of the reasons we don't take advertisements on the Solari report, but I also feel that way about other affiliations. So I want to be very careful about that. And this is the kind, given the shadow work I deal with, words cannot express, and I'm going to talk about it more when I do a recording with Harry Blaser this month. I cannot, you know, it's hard to express how much time and money Solari spends on the kind of shadow work and headwinds you deal with, spiritual and material warfare you deal with when you tell the truth. It's very, very expensive to tell the truth. It's a great privilege, and it's one you pay for with your time and your money. And of course, then you have to work to earn that money. It's a very significant commitment to tell the truth. And so that's what I want to focus on. And I don't want anything to distract from that. You continue, I followed you in various forums over the last few years and have been more than impressed. Wowed is more apt term. I suppose you're a speed reader. I'm a fan of Evelyn Woods, but unfortunately my brain fluid must be molasses. I can't, you know, I can read a lot of books real fast. There's some I just have to slow down and read very slow and careful. So it depends on the content. Let's see. All the noise and flashy lights up on the hill as of late are giving me apoplexy. You are very savvy on the finances, pushing all around so much and shining the light of truth in places that make the demon squirm. And that was a purposeful use of the word demon, if not outright demons, then those that do their bidding. I'm not a fatalist, but I do believe in a higher purpose. For all this mumbo jumbo, I'm in the process of waking up. I started in earnest about 7.5 after a 7.5 hour surgery 7 years ago. You might say the world became clearer to me. I bet. To be honest, I've been searching for answers in the late 70s, but always at a slow pace. I will take the risk of asking you for an opinion on an event which changed my life and continues to do so. So then you asked me to watch an interview that relates to aliens. I will take a look. You know, the one thing to warn you about is my approach, you know, the way I know whether something's true or not is my approach is the mathematics of time and money. And when you get into things that are either off planet or paranormal, my tool doesn't work anymore because it's a, you're talking about wildly different species, wildly different economies, and earthly time and money doesn't help. It's one of the reasons I kind of gave up about figuring that whole thing out until I found Richard Dolan. There were a lot of questions on the money and markets commentary, which I answered as we went over the last 2 weeks, except for one was, what is your view on military tribunals for civilian politicians? I will say this, something is definitely up. We see a significant number of indictments under seal around the country. Sessions has often doing something with a special prosecutor, Huber, out in Salt Lake City. Something's definitely up. We see the military tribunal executive order created at Christmas time. And we saw a very pointed question by Lindsey Graham to Brett Kavanaugh about his determinations, what his determinations would be on military tribunals. So something is definitely up. And I think purges are happening now quietly. See lots of people resigning. It's very simple. You go to someone with a sealed indictment, you say, we're going to, you can resign and maybe give us some money back, or you can be indicted. Which is it going to be? And so the person, you know, so if Rahm Emanuel isn't running for mayor again in Chicago, what's the meaning of that? Did he just decide he'd made enough money on real estate deals behind the scene, or was he purged? I don't know. But I think after the election, the purges are going to accelerate, and they're going to be cleaning out the people who did the financial coup are no longer needed. You're going to see a lot more purged on the Democratic side than the Republican side if the Republicans hold both houses. It sort of depends on how the election goes. One of the reasons the Democrats are fighting so hard is I think they know a purge is coming and they're afraid. But my other concern is the purge is going to be targeted at anybody who gets in the oligarch's way. They have a lot to do. They're moving fast. And they're moving secretly. The California fires, again, are an example of that. And I think they're how far they go, how far they're going to be able to go, is how successful they're going to be able to be at mind controlling and weaponizing the population. Because the people doing the purging are not going to be the guys at the top. It's going to be the population, you know, one part of the population turned on another part of the population. And, you know, it's going to be the local gang who shoots, as happened this week or last week. The president of the Memphis Chamber of Commerce was shot. And, you know, I think you've got the local gangs, people like the local MS-13 gang, unleashed to do this kind of purging on the population. So anything we can do to believe in the Constitution, to believe in the law, to believe in due process, and to disapprove of lynch mobbing and inquisitions and spectral evidence of any kind, if we can keep ourselves grounded, then, you know, we have to win this first and foremost spiritually and in the field. So what you do, what you feel, what you believe, what you say is all very powerful. And if we can keep the population grounded and grounded in law and ethics and not lynch mobbing and not allowing themselves to be turned into the Russian mob that cheers while the lions eat the Christians, we can stop. We can certainly stop the purge from really harming the innocent or the people in this country who really, like Alan Phillips, do protect our rights and our freedoms. Okay, that's it for this week. Please do listen to part one of News Trends and Stories with Dr. Farrell this week. And then next week, of course, News Trends and Stories, part two, very, very rich discussion. I'm going to interrupt the rollout of the wrap-up for a discussion I'm having with Harry Blaser. We're going to record it this weekend. For a placeholder, I'm calling it What's Next? The Oligarch Search Forward, but who knows what the name will be. I really want to dig in with Harry and talk about the details of what could happen after both this election and the presidential election in terms of reengineering what's happening in the U.S. and So we're going to dig in and record something. And I want to get that out because it's going to dovetail with much of what Joseph and I are talking about in part one and part two. So think of it as sort of more extensive deep dive on news trends and stories with more of a focus on what's coming up in the next 12 to 16 months. And then after that will be the third quarter wrap-up equity overview and Rambus chartology, and then our big theme, megacities and the rise of the global real estate and the growth of the global real estate companies. In the web presentation, you'll find table press charts. We're building tables of publicly traded real estate companies. So it's both real estate companies, real estate services, and then REITs. We have it in three different table press column. So if you're interested in what are the real estate companies around the globe that are publicly traded, it's always fun to play with those table press. And we've started to get them up now. We'll be working with them until we launch megacities. There's also under the megacity section we have up now, the Wikipedia chart of the top 46 or the 46 largest cities that are constitute the current megacities, and it's in a table press form, and you can play with it again. So until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.